You're on, Jack.
Is it three?
Not quite.
Three minutes.
Better wait till the last minute. What are you doing, Chrissy? Are you like driving?
I'm waiting to take pictures. I'm patiently waiting.
Don't get my phone off.
My little brother was in denial about going bald for a while. And he found out he was going bald by a newspaper article. It was at the back of his head. Get on the, paper there. He was like. Oh.
The scary thing is, I can remember when Mike Featherston's hair looked like mine and back, and now look at him now.
Has he got a full head of hair now?
Not hardly.
Oh, he didn't take one cure or whatever it is.
No, he didn't.
Curly blonde hair. So, 26, he went back to Columbia. His wife from Columbia, or his father-in-law. The customs people said, "Do you have another form of ID?" Because his went completely bald. He didn't believe that was him. He had to show him his Costco card.
Oh, man.
You got in the cover on a Costco card.
Hey, Randy. If you want to scoot down and move Dale over there, that way you don't look like you're just kind of hanging out on the end.
You tell me, boss.
Yeah, move down.
Yes, sir.
That'll be better for pictures.
Don't want you to be segregated over there by yourself.
I think you're better, Jack. Perfect. We're within a minute.
I felt like I was shuffling.
You got it. 3 o'clock.
Oh, very good. Okay, call the meeting to order on this January 22nd here in the Overton office. We're all posted in the locations and all, Miss Becky?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Can you hear us, Mr. Rust?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Welcome.
I hear you. Thank you. I heard you say it was only 18 degrees. I thought it was 80 degrees.
I don't know. Mr. Bunker said his water lines froze last night. It must have been pretty chilly.
Okay.
Looks like our first item of business then would be to do the oath of office.
Okay. I need everybody to stand up. Kind of face Christy over here so she can get a good picture instead of a bad one. Raise your right hand. You have a paper next to you. It has the oath that we're going to read from. I, state your name.
I, Richard Jones.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution and government of the United States and the Constitution and government of the state of Nevada against all enemies, whether domestic or foreign, that I will bear true faith, allegiance, and loyalty to the same, any ordinance, resolution, or law of any state notwithstanding, and that I will well and faithfully perform all the duties of the office of Overton Tower District Number 5 Board of Trustees, on which I am about to enter, so help me God. Thank you, your official.
You're installed, Becky.
Stephen, is Karina struggling over there?
It looks like she's struggling.
Hopefully you got a good one.
I took a lot.
Okay, next, item C, biennial selection of the board officers for the next 2 years. Possible action.
Do we nominate somebody?
I nominate Jack Nelson to be chairman of the board.
Can we do all of them at the same time?
And Vice Chair Richard Jones.
You can do them individually, all together, however you would like to.
Okay. I get all the money.
Good.
So yeah, I nominate Jack Nelson as chairman, Richard Jones as vice, and Mike Young as secretary.
I second.
Who was the second?
Jack.
Jack.
No, on that, do we need to designate that the treasurer, secretary, and treasurer also?
Yeah, secretary to slash treasurer.
Okay, everybody in favor of so nominations?
Aye.
Say aye.
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 Dale?
Aye.
Oh, very good.
Okay, good job.
That's it? That's all we need to do?
That was it, yep.
Okay. Are there any public comments for the meeting?
Yes, there is public comments here.
Okay, you have 3 minutes, go ahead.
Hi, it's Gary Elgort, citizen of Mesquite. I wanted to talk about the rate increase that happened while I was cruising the West African coast, but I wish I'd been here to comment on it earlier. I noticed that the Block 1 charges in general have gone up about 25% across the board, at least in the math I did for a couple of them. And I also noticed that the monthly base charge didn't change at all. Given that a year or so ago, maybe it's 2 years now, you had a study done that suggested that your base rate charges were extremely low, both for residential, a little bit low, and hugely low for some of the large service and industrial. I'm a little disappointed that you put all of the rate increase into the energy charges. I understand we got a new contract and that energy charges have gone up, but based on your own study, or at least the study you had conducted, your base rate charges are still way out of whack with what it was recommended they should be. And if they had been adjusted properly in the past, we might not have had such a high rate increase just purely on each customer's energy usage. I really wish that had been looked at more carefully, and I hope the next time this comes around again, you really take a close look at these base rate charges. It's surprising that with that study in your hands, you chose to purely increase the energy rates and not look at the overall income picture of the district.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Are there any more?
No. Thank you.
Would you like me to respond to that, or do you want us to?
I'd love to.
Gary, I appreciate you being here, and thanks for your question. This is Mendes. We had the same organization do our rate study for this rate increase, and we did discuss the base charge, and their recommendation was, with the significant changes to our contract, that we only change the kilowatt hour charges, and that we should not change the base charge at this time because of the confusion that adds to understanding the rates. And we did commit to look at the base charge again later once everybody's settled into those new rates. So I appreciate the comment. That's why we didn't tackle the base charge at this time. That was the recommendation of our rate study analyst. Oh, I'm okay. Thanks.
Well, I'd like to just say thank you very much for that clarification. I greatly appreciate it, because I understand working with the water district how difficult rate adjustments are. We've had our struggles too. So I appreciate the response, and thank you very much for that.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. Okay, next, item C, acceptance of the agenda.
I move to accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Everyone in favor, say aye.
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 Any nays? Okay, thank you. Call for Item F here, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting on December 10th.
I do not have a copy of them.
Miss Becky mailed them out.
I emailed them.
I had an electronic copy of them too. So.
Okay, that was the final then. But I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I read through them. I'll second them. I didn't see any.
No, I didn't.
Make the motion. You make the motion.
Oh, I'll make a motion too.
Okay.
Okay,
we got.
I would second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded multiple times. Thank you. Everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? What's the word?
Opposed.
Any opposed? Okay. All right, there's no chair report. How about a returning report? We welcome, by the way. I didn't even notice you slid in there.
You guys were all with your hands in the air.
Oh, okay.
Carefully, quietly.
Okay.
I have no report at this time unless anyone has questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All right. Mr. Cooper, manager reports.
Scott, if you would do the admin report right off the bat here, please.
My clicker does work. Okay, we're going to do the cybersecurity report. We're going to finish up the year of 2024 with all of this data. Cybersecurity training went well. December, we had 100% attendance. Cybersecurity lessons. We had the importance of post-incident analysis, the need for continuous vigilance, and the emotional impact of cybersecurity. Phishing results, we had one person clicked from the month of May all the way through to December, so we're really doing well there. Our phishing emails and our training is working. We had 32,000 email, 2,600 of those were spam in the month of December. And firewall blocks by country. Russia coming in at number one. Server system uptime, we're at 100%. Database backup and restoration has been tested. We are at 100% for the month of December. The EISAC continues to give us good information. The emails that we go through, there's 87 emails there in the month of December. These were the highlights of those emails. Vulnerability exploitation. It gave us some devices to look at, some Sonic firewalls and MOX devices that were exploited. We don't have any of those devices on our network. Credential compromise was one of the higher mentions in that list. And physical security threats came in with reports of drone sightings starting to grow as a threat, as a physical threat at substations.
By the way, just out of curiosity, what's a MOXIE device?
Those are just hardware devices. That would be a networking device or a firewall. And we don't happen to have those two brands on our system.
Oh, it's a brand?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So then this is the month that I like to do some year-end review to see what the trends are. So if you look here, this is the number of incoming phone calls for 2024. The trend is very much downward. We had 15,138 calls, incoming phone calls for 2024. That comes out to 58 average calls per day or 7 calls per hour on average. And then on the flip of that, if you look at the number of walk-ins, that keeps on rising. A little bit less than 24, but still rising. We had 25,027 walk-ins that our wonderful customer service status. I can only assume that we're getting more walk-ins because they want to visit with our amazing customer service staff. Like, that's what I attribute this to. But it's very interesting. I mean, average walk-ins per day, 96. And that comes out to about 12 per hour. And that's my report.
Wow.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
Question. and maybe Byron knows this, but I know through the FFA state federal regulations, what's the drone thing?
The drone stuff, I'm not really involved in. I do not.
That would fall through federal and FAA, I'm sure. But there's nothing the power district can do as far as flying overhead. Nothing they can touch that. I know
you mean prevent other people from flying drones?
Yeah, I mean,
there's restrictions already in place by the FFA.
I mean, there seems to be a ton of drones, even whether it's personal or whatever. Yeah.
Set a guy out there with a shotgun.
Whoa!
Well, you know, the interesting...
Man is retired, you and I can go to
the interesting thing, if you've been reading about the drone problems back in, I believe it's New Jersey, somebody asked, why aren't you shooting these things down? They said it's illegal to shoot down a drone.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
That's through the FAA, through the federal regulations.
And so you have these drones that are penetrating military bases and airports and other things like that, and there's nothing that they're doing about it.
Well, they should change that legislation.
Yeah.
Well, that's my question. It's like, as time goes on, you see more of this stuff.
Yeah.
Vulnerable.
They have some severe penalties for all of this, for people flying the drones. And there's, nowadays, you have to register your drone. There's only certain areas, certain heights you can fly, all that kind of stuff. Most people that are drone owners, like myself, have it parked in the closet now.
Right.
No, I was just kind of curious how that...
It's gotten so restrictive.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, Randall, if you'd do the engineering report, please.
Yes. Hunt Electric was awarded four of our upcoming projects, and they're going to start doing foundation this February on the 138 T-line in between Raptor and Long Drive, and also the Tortoise to Gila 138 line, and also the foundations at Long Drive. And they'll be starting those in February in preparation to starting hopefully in April or May of this year on the rest of the project. We're working on the replacing the wood three-pole structure up at Tortoise Substation. We call it RG1. This is the forming that was set up. Summit is the contractor on this project. We checked depth, we checked rebar, and we do inspections on the cages and the holes themselves. Actually, the number of concrete yards were poured were 75 yards in these three holes. That's enough to do a 3,500 square foot home.
So on those, you're the only quality control. Not the only, but you guys are quality control. There's not like a government agency or anybody that is looking over our shoulder to make sure they're done right.
I have a concrete company that does pull cylinders. That we check compression after the fact. The rebar cages are approved prior to going in the ground by our engineer, and then we verify that they're built according to the approved drawings. So yeah, we are the quality control. Yeah, we inspect.
So the county's not involved in that kind of stuff?
No.
Unbelievable.
Well, we haven't asked them.
Don't.
That's right. It's kind of a gray area when we're working in substations, and so we don't ask them, and so it works out really well for us.
Very good.
It's interesting. On Summit and some of these large contractors, they have steel forms. The bases are metal that they put together, so they have forms 6 foot, 5 foot, 8 foot, 9 foot already built in place, and they just slip them together. All the steel and everything set up. And so they set up really quick. They insulated the foundations after they poured them because of the cold weather to help keep the heat in and cause them not to freeze. We also have, they stripped them already, and they'll be prepping to stand the poles up within the next 2 or 3 weeks and tying RG1 into the ring bus. This is a Raptor substation. We had to do a turning lane into Raptor substation. The transformer truck could not make the turn to get into the substation, so we had to add a turning lane. And this is the finishing portion of the contractor getting ready to asphalt pave it. And this concludes my report. Are there any questions?
I would just add, if you don't remember, that the poles that Randall showed where we're putting in the steel foundations, we're replacing those wood poles that have been struck by lightning 2 times where we had 2 big long outages. And so I'm really excited to get rid of those wood poles and get steel poles in there. So very exciting. OK. Okay, thank you, Randall. Let's go to line operations. Kyle, if you would give us your report, please.
You betcha. Okay, for service installations for the month of December, we had 34 residential connects, no commercial once again. Gives a good snapshot there of the year of 2024. April was exceeding well, but otherwise pretty average ebbs and flows throughout the year, it looks like there. Service installations, this is just a further graph of that first one there. On the right, it gives a snapshot of the past 3 years, kind of shows the progress. 2022, 2023, and 2024, what we did in the past few years. 23 was down, 22 was high. Maybe that's, I'm not a forecaster, but obviously ebbs and flows of COVID is what I initially point to. On the left, that table is a snapshot of our substations that we have throughout our system, and then it shows the commercial hookups for each substation and the residential hookups and the total for each hookup. And this is for 2024. Canyon Crest and Dinosaur are where the growth are in Mesquite. Dinosaur is Pulte, all that northwest area of Mesquite. Canyon Crest is everything up and over the hill towards the Lincoln County line, clear to the Utah state line, anywhere in that area. And that's where we understand is the growth, and it proves it with this table here. In this valley over here, Whipple Substation, which is Logandale, is where the growth is.
Is that by kind of by the fairgrounds?
It is. Yep, it is. That's where the one of the very few, or if only, subdivisions that has empty lots in this valley is, that has growth happening up there, Valley Heights. Outages for the month of December. We have 5 planned, 4 unplanned. Go through a couple here. The one that has the 12,672 associated minutes with customers to it, that's the highest one. What that was it was an animal inside of our switch, like I've described to you for the last past 2 months. I think I, in fact, reported on this outage. It was fresh right before the last board meeting, so I felt it was valuable. We've since gone through that entire area and plugged that all off, concreted it all up, and I, you know, don't want to jinx ourselves, but we feel very confident that we have that curbed for now. That one is extremely bad looking as a report like this, because the power went off to all those commercial residences at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., but then businesses didn't open till 7 or 8, so the phone calls didn't come in. That we didn't even know we had an outage, quite honestly, on that. We had a blown fuse is all we had, and there's no report, there's no SCADA operation that would share that we have an outage out there. So that's why it looks, it stands out as a lot of customers and a lot of customer minutes.
When you say you concreted them, like the whole, where these animals were getting in, inside, you guys have done some work to...
Yeah, inside like a transformer, yeah. There's an opening where all the conduits come in and just exposes to where the dirt is. Now rodents realize that it's nice and warm and safe inside those, and so they tunnel a hole in there and then get up and in. And we've done this many times in the past, and it's just something we're going to continue to do, that we just fill up that bottom layer with concrete once all the infrastructure is in and all the customers onto it. We just fill it with, well, it's not concrete, it's more of a slurry. So in the future, if you need to break it out, it's very easy to break out. But it plugs off that risk at that point for any rodents to get in.
Okay.
We'll go on to the next slide here. So the total outages for the year of 2024, on the left gives you a snapshot of the past 3 years. We'll go to 2024 down there in the bottom left corner. Like when I first initially saw this, I'm like, oh man, we're quite high. But then you study into it and you see that the planned outages are exceptionally high. And that really speaks to our maintenance program and the effort we're putting towards that. You know, the outage mitigation, the men are always tasked constantly with going out and taking the section of line and let's just go through and plan some outages to just upgrade and prevent outage. So that speaks to that. But otherwise, the unplanned outages are in relation to what normally is happening for the past few years. On the right is the general report of all those different causes. Now, I would like to give you a more defined cause for each one, but those are used utility-wide, or well, not just our utility, but industry-wide.
for our AC, SADE, and safety reporting. But they give a general idea to me that's monitoring these reports of where those allergies are happening and what we need to look further into. The top one up there is material or equipment failure that, well, 20,000 customers is affected. That was the CTVT that we had fail in toward a substation. That was 18,200 customers that went out. So that's why that one stands out greatly from the rest of the report there. Other or cause unknown is the one that I don't love, but you know, can you have blinks or outages caused that we can't point a finger at? If it was a bird that a cat grabbed before we got to the bottom of the pole, then it has to be marked down as cause unknown. We feel like pretty confident that it's caused by a bird, but it goes as a cause unknown at that one. Key measurables and insights for the line team. These are just the jobs that the men worked on over the past, since October, roughly. Mm. Not roughly. Since October. This is the jobs and the work that they accomplished. They did 35 jobs. Retired poles, 13. That's kind of high as in comparison to the changed out poles. But then you reference the next graph down below, new high voltage. That tells me that it was a overhead to underground replacement. Randy?
Hey, just a question on last year. It said you had 62 planned outages. This year was 147.
Yeah.
What's such a big jump?
Planned outage is where we go through and we do that maintenance plan. And that's part of our maintenance. That's part of the push and our focus.
Is that because of the growth that's coming? You have to start shutting things down to kind of upscale?
No, just to go through, say, an area and take out a transformer to change it out. Not because it caused an outage, but because we want to change it out because we see a leak happening.
Sure.
Or change out connections in a secondary bulb or on a pole. We want to change out those connections before they cause. So it's an outage that we planned is what it was.
Yeah, I got you. Quite a bit of difference.
We still have an outage, but it makes it a lot more manageable and shorter.
Yeah, I was just curious. I mean, there's
substantially more. Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think going forward, that's going to be our momentum that we're going
to try to stay ahead of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
However, on the long run, then we should see unplanned outages go down or stay the same.
We would love that. I'm not going to put my word to any of that. We're going to continue to monitor that, and I'll report it to you.
I think I'll back Mike up on that.
We'll learn from that together.
The right answer, Kyle, is yes, we would have more unplanned outages.
We should. You're exactly right. We absolutely should.
In theory, the number would have been greater.
Yep, we should. You're absolutely right.
Kyle, I want to go back about a year. We talked about the switches, the 110 and 112, that were failing that brand.
Shell Better.
What's our status? I'm sure that's part of these, you know, planned outages. Are we still changing those switches out, or have we completed that program?
We've completed that, and in fact, we completed it last year.
We're
well past that.
Okay.
Yeah, well past that.
So when you have a planned outage, do you call all the people in that area?
Yeah,
do you really?
Absolutely. It takes days in advance planning to set that all up so that everybody's aware. Businesses are very tough. You know, they have to work around that.
So is that customer service that does that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, if it's a small scale outage, the line team might take care of it. But then if it's more than they can handle, they call on Christy and her team to take care of that. Yeah.
We do door knockers as well. Yeah. Go door to door and give them a notice on their doorknob.
But the plant outages are usually few customers because we can, because of our redundancy, provide most customers in this plant.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's probably why you see a high number. We're keying off on these areas that, you know, Mesquite, Bunkerville, that have secondary vault for every three houses. It's easy to take them out, go through the connections on those houses and move on. Make sure they're good for another generation. On the right, I want to key off on our inspections, audits, and locates. They continue to stay high, and I'm very pleased with the men's work on that. We have a couple men that are assigned to that mostly. That's their role. Inspections, they're frequent in Mesquite. That's just a continuous. I see now that there's an update on that one, but there's a lot of work to be done there with inspections and locates constantly. Some of the other tools that my men use to that I measure and watch and monitor, the fleet requests, That's where, on the right here, it's literally a screenshot off the app that Merlin Wallenstein has built. Fleet requests are if your truck has a problem, you need to send a request to the mechanic to get it on his schedule to get it fixed. It's all handled off that app that Merlin's designed, and it's capable of being used anywhere. Like, so say the men get to the job site and they realize, hey, this light's out, they jump on and get it done immediately. It's live at that point.
So do you have one mechanic here, one mechanic there?
One for both valleys.
Okay. Yeah.
So 176 fleet requests this past year. Tailboards, same story. The men, before they start jobs, they're required to do a verbal or a written tailboard. We recommend a written tailboard. 785 were done that year, and same thing, they're done off their phone. They're capable of doing it at every moment, wherever they're at on our system.
I like an inventory of the truck. What is a tailboard?
No, sorry. Yeah, I say it's like I know, like every show, right? Right? It's the pre-job hazard assessment of the job. It lines out the EMS response to it, the address, the men that are involved. Besides, it goes through all the PPE, all the procedures of the job, like line by line of what the job entails for the day, for the moment. What else does it cover? All the hazards, live lines, traffic. It's just the chance before you start the job. Has this written out so that it includes you in to ask all the questions to relay all the information that needs to be taken care of on that particular job. And that's an OSHA requirement that gets done. Mm-hmm. So from what we came from when I began, it was a paper copy. If it got done, it was a paper copy. The paper copy didn't make it back to the network to be saved. And quite honestly, where we're at right now is just incredible, because it's live, it's downloaded immediately as soon as the men get done, and it's continually followed.
So you're saying on your phone, you put who was at the meeting, and topics covered, mm-hmm. Is that it? And then you send it in, it's entered in the database, and yep. If it ever needs to be pulled out, it can.
Exactly, okay. Yep. Exactly. The last one there is material requests. That's just essentially the staking and planning team plans a job, and they have all the material prepped for the job. But say you get out there and you need one more piece of equipment, or one more part. In the past, you run to the truck, grab the part, and just put it up in the air. Well, it became where you need to inventory and audit all that material. So in the past, it was paper and pencil, and let's be honest, there's a lot of room for error there, and if it ever got done. Now, it's live, and it's active immediately. Rich.
Yeah, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you.
We've grown tremendously in the last few years with this material request process. It's just so simple to be able to grab that if you're pulling off of a truck or you had to run back to the shop for a piece of part that wasn't planned for. It's live immediately that you picked it, you designate the part, and it's pulling from our inventory at that point. It's incredible.
This was all, that app was all designed by?
Merlin, our IT team, yeah. You know, Merlin is our wizard, takes care of all this IT, and the entire IT staff, quite honestly. But it comes with good ideas from different departments that says, hey, what do you think about something that can make our lives easier here? And then the IT team dreams it up and gets it in work. It's amazing. It really is key to have them on our team. Last thing in safety meeting, for the month of December, we had a topic of lockout, tagout, and radio frequency. Had a great attendance, both valleys. And then the hard one, the no lost time accident recording for the was at 7 years, 2 months, and obviously everybody's aware that we had an accident January 7th that reset that clock on January 8th. So moving forward, we have a strong goal of meeting that pinnacle again, and we'll work towards that.
I did have an opportunity to talk to Layton today. Sounds like he's doing up and up. Yeah. Ready to come back to work, I think, next week is what he was telling me.
That's what we hope.
It's really fantastic. Really turned out a bad situation. Hopefully it turned out good for him. And
truly is a blessing.
Yeah, he sounded really well. And did, yeah. That's a scary deal.
Well, he's such a positive kid, so yeah, he always sounds very well.
He's a super good guy.
Yeah. Thank you.
So what did we learn about the accident? We just kind of got the
We're going to talk about it in executive session.
Very good.
We'll give you a detailed report.
Thank you.
Okay. Just a coincidence, yesterday, our security guy that we buy our security parts and pieces from visited us yesterday, and we kind of ran through some stuff on our system. And I noticed there was a checkbox in there for drones. I said, how do you spot drones with your system? He goes, we have a new technology coming out, should be out by the end of this year, that sits in your substation, and every drone has an RF signal that's reported out of that drone, and this device will pick up that signal, and it'll know exactly whose drone that about. It'll know the serial number of that drone. If it's registered, it'll know who's registered to. And the technology that it has, that system also ties into our cameras. So it knows where the person is that's flying the drone, and it will swing that camera around the camera and video that guy flying the drone.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, we have that, or are we going to potentially get that?
That's in the works right now. He says it won't be ready until probably the end of this year.
We're going to keep a drone in the closet. Right?
Well, people that are, a lot of these drone sightings, they're by the people who aren't registering them, and they're flying them like this in protest of all the heavy restrictions on drones.
People do that?
Imagine that. But yeah, this technology will actually be able to take the serial number from that drone and then go out where that drone's being flown to and zoom the camera out and actually zoom in on the drone pilot.
Big brother
with these cameras.
Always.
Should be pretty cool. Expect it to be on the budget next year.
Sounds like an amazing thing.
That's sweet.
Like a satellite is taking the video, or?
No, it's our cameras.
It's our cameras in the yard.
Yeah, in the yard. Yeah. So our cameras are tied up to that system. It's a radar system is what our system is, and it goes out and covers the yard and outside the yard too, so it can see anything. The radar will actually pick up on movement and all kinds of stuff.
Is that a version of the AI that's coming out?
It's got some AI technology involved in it, but those radars will actually point our camera right to where it sees that motion, and it'll follow it around, and it'll do that same thing. It'll follow wherever that drone pilot's at, or where our camera's at.
I guess that you really are wise about what you do.
Yeah, you do. So when our Falcon Ridge substation building, or our Falcon Ridge substation we started adding that distribution side into it, we realized quickly that our building was too small for everything that needed to be put in it. So we moved that building to Bunkerville and got a building that was more suitable for the Falcon Ridge substation. So this is the building at Bunkerville substation, and our substation crew's been hard at work. So this is the conduit that they ran. This is the finished product after they run the conduit. So here's the new risers here on part of that equipment. So in Bunkerville substation, everything is, right now it's outside in the elements, everything's in cabinets. And what we're going to be doing is moving, this right here is a recloser controller. That is basically everything is out in the yard. This is an interface box. And when they're done, they wire this interface box in. This is the recloser controller you see mounted there. It's down here now. They'll uncouple those cables and plug them in on the side, and it's ready to go. They'll take this out and use it elsewhere. This is the regulators. Same thing, they run their conduits up into the regulators. These controllers will come out, they'll plug a pin in, and it'll run into the building, and the regulators will be inside the building. They got the same thing with the meters and everything. It's really been good. That building was perfect for Bunkerville. Even if we expand to a second bay, all of the equipment, everything's ready for it. So it was a good move to take that building that wasn't big enough for Falcon and move it to Bunkerville. So they've been working hard on that. They've also been working with...
It was really well cared for, Bob. It was a good hand-me-down.
It was. Okay. It was. It was slightly used.
Gently used. Is that what
gently used?
Appreciate the thriftiness.
So the substation crew has been working with John Garcia in painting buildings and towers. This is Whipple Substation. This is in Logandale, out by the fairgrounds. And they got up, these potheads are hot. They couldn't get up any higher than that. They had to stay in that mad distance. And so what they'll do is they'll de-energize this, and it takes quite a bit of switching to actually de-energize these. So once they're able to come and do that, they'll de-energize this and finish that tower out. There's Tanner rolling some paint on. But you can see here in this picture, these towers out there in Logandale, that wind blows that sand, and those towers, some of them were down to just thin primer. They look pretty ragged. And so it's quite an improvement. You can see here, you know, I don't know if that's rust or just primer on the seams where they welded, but they went up and they sanded all of these towers, and they got the 69 side done because they could de-energize the 69 side. So they got that done, but they're still waiting to de-energize the distribution side of those towers. So it looks quite a bit better. You don't see all of the primer and the rust coming through. Hopefully it'll help to last a lot longer. They'll last way after I'm gone, so. The Mesquite substation, Painted Hill substation projects are in the planning stages right now. And you're probably wondering what we're gonna do here. ECI did a study for us, and in that study, it said that we need to change these two transformers, these two 10 MVA transformers, out to two 20 MVA transformers. And to do that, there's a lot of work that has to go into doing that. For one, we can't just pull that transformer out and put a new transformer in. It's got to be protected by a breaker and equipment, and it's pretty extensive at that point, because once you get past the 10 MVA transformer, anything bigger, it's got to be protected by a breaker, and you've got to have a differential zone and all that stuff in there in place. So what we're planning on here is we're going to take this and we're going to put it in here. That study also said we had to put another 10 MVA in Painted Hills. So we're going to pull this out of Mesquite and put it in Painted Hills. This is Painted Hills and this is Mesquite. And once we get that out, it's still pretty tight in there. So we've been working with Qualis, who is an engineering firm, and a company called Myers. And what Myers is a building manufacturer, and they will build a building that's fairly small that will house almost all the equipment for the substation. Breakers, PTs, CTs, metering equipment, everything will be inside the building. So it'll be a metal clad switchgear.
You showed us a picture of that either last month or the month before. So are both of those bays, we're going to do the metal clad switchgear in both those locations where the 10 MVAs are?
Yeah, what we're going to do is this will come out and we'll put 220s here with the building. And we're not sure the location of the building yet. But the thing about the building is it can come underground. So we can go almost anywhere in there that we can find space for it, which really helps out, because we're going to have, Rich may be familiar, we're going to have a breaker and a half here for the 69 line in and out, and then two transformers, two 20 MVA transformers, and then from there we'll go into the building.
So that existing site at the bottom, we'll just abandon those and do junctions at that point for the underground?
Yeah, we'll take these into the building.
Okay.
Yeah, and this transformer, right now it's slated to go to Overton substation, because Overton's got that Maloney.
Got that LTC. That has an LTC.
It has an LTC, yes. So if we get enough interest, this 10 MVA could actually go to Glendale if we wanted it to, because it does have an LTC. We can replace that one pretty easy with it. But that's our plans for that. What did I miss on this? Anything? Have you got any questions so far? Oh, and it's also complicated, because we have to keep this transformer running while we do all of that construction, even though we're moving that one up here. So we still have to keep that energized, and that's why
we have to do all the space-saving things that we can possibly do in that situation.
Is the new 20, is that in current budget or what?
It's in current budget. Yep. They've actually, the bid for those should be back 1st of February.
Okay. So there'll be two 20s in there,
there'll be two 20s. Mm-hmm. Two 20s, and we're using LTC, so we don't have to have that extra space for regulators and switches and all that stuff, too. Okay. That project's expected to take about 2 years. Hopefully it's done in 2 years. So, and that'll give us the capacity we need for that downtown area for quite a while.
That bottom portion, that's the original substation site in Mesquite. That site was in 69, that was when, basically Mesquite, we went on the 69 line, that was the only transformer in Mesquite at that location.
In the 40s?
No, in 1969, that was entered.
Almost the 70s, my goodness.
I've been working with Melissa, Tenasca, and NV Energy to arrange meter reading and data sharing with two large customers that we have on our system that we need to work with to that information to use to create a rate and also to facilitate billing and load forecasting for Tenasca. So anyway, been working on that. And this week, we kicked off a pilot program with Aclara with a hardware called the Edge Gateway. And what this Edge Gateway does is we've got capacitor banks and reclosers and stuff that are out in the field that we can't bring back into our system. We have the Aclara infrastructure out there that reads our meters. And what this will do is we can pair this Edge Gateway with those components, and it'll use our already existing infrastructure to bring that back into our system for reading, onto our SCADA system. So we kicked that off this week. It's a pilot program. We're doing four right now, and it'll be on a recloser and three capacitor banks. We'll bring that information to our SCADA system so we can have visibility on those. And that's my presentation.
Question for you. Kyle mentioned that when we had the 12,000 outage, customer hours, and it happened early in the morning, and our commercial customers didn't get there. Is there something that we can do that will find that for us? I know that we've made a lot of headway that way in the system, but why can't we discover that?
So the existing meter reading system we have is on PowerLink Carrier. And the only way that we know that power's gone out is if somebody's sitting there and goes, okay, I can see a couple meters going out, and I can ping those and bring it back in. It's not real accurate. It's not the best way to look at a meter to get back an outage report. But with the new metering system, the meters will actually send out a signal that says, hey, I'm out of power, and it'll come back in, and it actually reports into SCADA. So we've got a few of those meters out there, but we're still far and few between getting all those out. But eventually, we will have those on end of lines and stuff like that. Bring that stuff in and hopefully make it a little bit better.
And it's built by the same company that we're using. So it's an upgrade to their existing system. So it'll take some changes and upgrades, but it's not a total overhaul.
Yeah, placing a few meters in strategic places is what we're going to do next.
Thanks, Kevin. Jonathan?
All right. All right, before we get started in the financial statements and reporting, each of y'all received a little cheat sheet here. This is our annual reporting for 2024. Front and back there just goes over our just some key points, so if anybody asks, or so you know, these are pretty much key statistics for our power district here for 2024. So if anybody have any questions regarding that? Okay. It's really good. It's really good to know, especially when you're going to seminars and your trainings and stuff. When you're talking with other utilities and trying to get a feel for our system compared to others. Also, in December we did our finance department. We were ramping up and getting ready for our year-end closing, and we had we were getting ready and working before December to get ready for this, but for our vehicle and inventory audit. So our finance department did a good job. We got all prepared for that and did an accurate reconciliation. We had our third-party auditors, Hafen and Buckner, out on site on December 19th, and they came out and did physical counts and inspections. And that started off our 2024 audit, which our financial audit, which is just getting started. And then also we have on January 1st our billing team. So while most of us were either sleeping or still out partying on New Year's Day, our billing team decided to come in at 5 a.m. and do some work. And news to me, this is, I guess, industry standard that on January 1st that we close the system down and we have to do our year-end billing closing. We have to shut a lot of the things down. Our software companies are on call and on demand and scheduled to work that day also to help support this. So our billing team did a great job starting at 5 a.m. worked through their lunch, and I know we're not on call or on standby, or we don't work a lot of overtime, but at least that day we were kicking butt and working on a holiday. So they did a great job doing that. And then the same week we implemented our new rate change. Our billing team did a great job doing all the legwork for that, and we implemented our new rate change that week, and we've so far successfully sent out our third billing cycle that's getting ready to go out, and then we have one more billing cycle with a new rate increase, so everything has gone smoothly for those. So.
Have you had much feedback on the increase? Fair enough.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So it goes.
All right. So we'll get started with with our financial statements. So this is our statement of operations. So in December, starting on line one, our operating revenues in the far right column, we have $3,623,000. On line three, our cost of purchase power was $2,030,000, which was our main contributing factors to our line 20 total cost of electric service of $3,352,000. Then on line 22, we had interest received from investments in the amount of $110,000, and these all contribute to our total line 29 margins for December of $719,000. Then if you go to column B at the bottom, our total year-to-date margins are $12 million. So we had just a slight increase from 2023. If you look at our 2023 annual margins. I added in so on our balance sheet, I'm going to get back to our balance sheet. So our balance sheet includes we'll start on the asset side. Our line five net utility plant value was $132,918,000. $1,000. Our line 8 investments and associated organizations, which is mainly our patronage capital. And then line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, line 23 materials and supplies, which is our inventory. And these all contribute to our total line 29 total assets of $185,119,000. And on our liability side, we have beginning on line 36, total margins and equities valued at $127,513,000. We have our line 43 long-term debt, line 48 accounts payable, and again our line 57 total liabilities and equities of $185,119,000. So our net assets increased from 2023. We were at 175, so we had an increase of roughly $10 million, which is about, it was just under 5% increase.
I know, I'm just looking at that line for inventory, over 4 million now. I know we're buying a lot of stuff for the lines and stuff. What do we anticipate, you know, with the cost of supplies now, our inventory kind of level out after we complete the tortoise to, and some of those larger projects?
You'll notice, Rich, if you look up on line 2, construction work on in progress, that typically is, you know, running around the $5 million range. So a lot of that material has already been
already out there.
It's already been assigned to the jobs. It hasn't been closed yet, but it's already been moved over. But I would anticipate that our material is always going to be in the $2 to $3 million range, whereas, you know, years ago we always tried to stay around $1 million.
Yeah,
we've at least doubled that.
For many years, we averaged $1.8 million. That's right where we ended up every year. And then at the start of COVID, well, just before that, Mendes tasked us with having 1 mile of overhead and underground line for each size of it, the material available for 1 mile. So that put us up to about $2.4 million, $2.5 million just with that. The remainder that you see is purchasing for large jobs, but it's mostly increase in cost. We do have larger supplies on some items, but if you remember, transformers or special equipment, they're not even included in the inventory. So the most of that, and we've addressed this a lot with our purchasing agent, what is the turnover of this material in the warehouse? Are we overbuying on some things, especially during supply chain issues? If we could get 10, we bought 10, even though we were only going to need 7 because we didn't know when we were going to be able to get 7 again. And so we're monitoring that turnover, but we're also seeing that costs have not come down on a lot of those materials.
Yeah, it just seems like a higher number than we're used to seeing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Should, because of that, should the minimum on hand really be sort of ratcheted up almost like a cost of living? Because as you say, $1 million isn't what it was 10 years ago, that's for sure.
The same amount of equipment is required for 1 mile of line, regardless of the cost on it.
Yeah.
But one thing that we are ensuring is that we've set all of the minimum quantities required in our warehouse to be higher to ensure that we always have that. We don't dip below that waiting in case there is supply chain issues on some of that material.
Well, that's fine as long as we don't let a dollar amount set that, because that should be set by need.
No, it's quantity, not by
yeah,
dollar.
Money we got
yeah,
there.
No, yeah, it's definitely by need.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's a great point.
Yeah, and that I was looking at the 2023. That line 23 was right at 3 million. So that's good. So this is the detail for our cash held in our checking accounts. We closed with a month ending balance of $4,723,000. Towards the bottom, we have our assets and our Morton account. Our Morton account was $26,097,000, and then our Goldman Sachs account is $625,000. So we've been using a lot of that to fund all the projects that are going. big chunk. If you notice, there's a big chunk. The Tortoise to Gila line is, we purchased, I don't know how much, just well over $1 million probably in poles already, just in the last month or so. And then, yeah, that's just going to continue to increase. This is a detail of our investments in our Morton account by security type in the pie graph, and then by security duration in the bar graph. So most of those funds are readily available, and like I said, in the next 6 months we're going to be using the majority of that amount on that first call. So as of December 31st, OPT had a total of 18,782 customers, which is an increase of 60 from November, and it represents from January, or from December of last year, it's a 2.7% increase. So we've been averaging right around a 3% growth the last quite a while. Our ratios down at the bottom, our modified debt service coverage ratio is 2.87. Equity is a percentage of assets, 68.88%, and our times interest earned ratio is 7.31. Connection fees.
Excuse me. On those ratios.
Yes.
Maybe in your next presentation, you can go over really what they're all about, because it's a little fuzzy for me. So it'd be nice if you could take a minute and explain what each of those ratios represent and where we are and how it's figured.
Okay, yeah, I'd be glad to. I'll add another slide too to break it down.
Thank you.
So we can follow it easier. Our connection fees, we received a total of 44 valued at $41,213 for December. Current billing arrangements, we have 50 residential. Currently, I have 50 residential customers valued at $7,316 and 3 commercial valued at $148. Typically, this time of year, when I've looked back to the last 2 or 3 years, December is a high month where we extend the billing arrangement, so that's pretty on par for what we've seen in the past. And our roundup program, we have $779 in Virgin Valley and $248 in Moab Valley. This is the breakdown of our loans held with CFC. Down towards the bottom, we have our total outstanding loan is $46,617,000. Back up at the top, our last quarterly payment was due December 31st in the amount of $1.4 million. And then our average interest rate after discounts is 3.35%. So we, from the beginning of year to, well, from January to December, we paid approximately, or reduced that, our balance on that is approximately $4 million.
I'm thinking that too.
A little over $4 million.
And there's no more of those available for repricing. I noticed that we're getting, a lot less money now than we're paying.
Right. Yeah. And that is correct. No more available for repricing. So those interest rates will remain same. They remain unchanged until the entire
thing is paid off.
Yeah. Here's the detail of our revenue by customer class, and we have it blown up here at the bottom. This is the summarized portion. So in December, in the light blue at the bottom, our monthly cost of power was 5.49 cents. Our monthly revenue was 10.75 cents. And our average 2024 cost was right at 5 cents.
That slide's going to be a little more interesting next year.
Yeah, that's the last time we're going to see that.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Take a good, hard, long look.
Same with our statement of operations. It's really going to...
We'll see some changes coming up.
Yeah. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
I don't know if you would speak to this, but how's the changeover to Tenasca? Somebody just kind of let us know how
that's
going.
Well, that's going to talk about that.
One question though, have we had many complaints, high bill complaints? I know my wife says social media, there's kind of been some discussion on that, on social media, on the price increase.
I've met with two of our larger commercial customers. I've met with the CEOs of both of them to review the necessity for the rate increase and go through that. I went there anticipating a spirited conversation, and they were both very, very good. We have customers that are, of course, calling in. Our customer service staff is well trained on that, and my advice is stay off of social media.
So I went up to the front desk today and talked to Christy and the ladies up at the front desk, and they said we've only had, you know, a couple of billing cycles come through, and they said there have been some questions and some misconceptions. They've answered their questions. Most of the stuff that's going on is on the rant and rave, and I mean, the people that are pontificating there don't know what's going on, and they don't have the facts. And if they want to talk, we're here for them.
Probably the one that's happy is the canning company. They're probably very happy with their bill.
Yeah, but I don't know that anybody's super happy besides them, but most people understand.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan. Me, Lisa.
So the first thing that I want to talk to you guys about is that we received our Fitch rating back. Well, I guess I want to say, first off, Happy New Year. I feel like I haven't seen you guys. We moved our December meeting up a week, and we moved our January meeting back a week. So I've missed you. I'm happy to have you guys back.
We haven't seen them since last year.
Yes. So I reported to you that on the week of our board meeting in December, I was meeting with the Fitch team, and they were going to give us their review. I'm going to go ahead and just read. They affirmed our outlook at A stable, and their rating detail there states, the affirmation of the A rating reflects Fitch's expectation that OPDFI's financial performance will remain healthy despite future capital spending and increased power supply costs. While OPDFI's very low leverage suggests a potentially higher analytical outcome, the overall A rating considers the weaker economy of the utility service area, supply contract renewal risk, and the fact that the utility's financial profile has historically been vulnerable to macroeconomic conditions. We've talked about this before with this Fitch rating. Something that we cannot control is the fact that many of the industries that we serve are very susceptible to the economy. As the economy goes down, less people come to travel, they come to spend less money on our at our casinos. That's outside of Overton Power's control. Now, as we see new industrial loads come in, that may change. That may change that rating a little bit. But what they're saying for us is that essentially we're not going to get higher than what this is based on the area that we serve, because we've asked them about that before. All of our other metrics are increasing and looking better. Why don't you give us a higher rating? Well, because you're historically vulnerable to those macroeconomics. When the economy shifts, you see a shift in your customer base. So we're still pleased with this. We're not required to have a Fitch rating, but I think it's good. It's good practice for us, and it gives you guys another outside person or entity to look at our financials and reaffirm our decisions. So I suggest that we stay with it, and we thank them for their time. It's quite a long process, and we give them a thorough amount of information for them to do their ratings.
Do our creditors like seeing it, like Sears and stuff, or do they care about it?
No. We started that when we sold bonds, and then we've just continued that on. CFC does not require that.
And you know, Tenasca and Morgan Stanley, they look at that. That's something they consider, but but you know, they, that helps, but they base it on what our ratios are.
We transitioned to Tenasca on January 1st. As you guys all know, the lights stayed on. That transition went well. Leading up to that transition, they also helped with the first portion of our transition to a NITS customer through NV Energy. And their team is very well versed on handling such thing. They've done a lot of 704B customers through NV Energy, so they were very knowledgeable. They helped us with a lot of the reporting. And so we've completed that first piece. That was important for Tenasca so that they could set up all of the designated network resources for us on NV Energy system. And then we have the second piece, which is requires studies saying what will our load growth be. And we are working closely with both Tenasca and Randall is helping with completing those studies. We're hoping to have those done by the middle of this year. So so far, everything is going great with Tenasca. As Kevin mentioned, we have two solar backfeed projects that are in our service territory that we are transitioning from NV Energy, who was feeding them during their construction phase. They are in our service territory, so we are required to serve their load. And so we are working with NV Energy and Tenasca to get all of that billing data, and we will be bringing back contracts for those to you guys in the coming months. As Jonathan mentioned, we implemented the rate increase. Again, we wish that we never had a rate increase, but I think it's gone well. We have a junior staff in our billing department, and so I want to commend Jonathan and his staff. They worked hard on that. They double-checked, triple-checked, quadruple-checked, then sent out bills, and then prayed that they were calculated correctly. They did a very, very good job. We have continued discussions with Tenasca, developers, and future businesses with new loads, and all that that implies. Some of these loads are quite large, and some of this I will discuss with you guys in executive session tonight. But we are working on processes and procedures. We have somebody who is very well-versed, who will report on that in a minute, that's helping us with all of those processes and procedures and evaluations of those loads of those size. We completed the purchase of the land that was adjacent to our Glendale substation up in Moapa. That has all been taken care of. And then finally, I represented the Region 9 at the NRECA meeting last week in Marco Island, Florida, for the Regulatory Standing Committee. We reviewed and provided recommendation on 48 regulations. These will be presented and voted on at the annual meeting in March that is being held in Atlanta, Georgia this year. And some of the regulations discussed encompassed the support to address supply chain disruptions, support for natural gas-fired generation, transmission planning and cost allocation, federal land use management specifically related to wildfire risk. This resolution was a part of the committee. We had three subcommittees that I was on, and that was actually developed by the, I have to read the name of this one, Rural Electric Statewide Managers Association Wildfire Working Group that our very own Carolyn Turner from NREA headed. I don't even know. It's a long one, even if it's an acronym. So that was neat that I got to help push that one through. It was, we provided support for hydroelectric dams as well as nuclear power. And it was really informative to me. I have attended one of those meetings at an annual meeting a couple of years ago, and I'm going to be perfectly honest, I found it to be a snooze fest. I thought, why are we sitting through this, you know, voting on all of these things? And then when you go to this meeting and you find out how genuinely important that is. So every lobbyist and employee of NRECA that deals with legislators has this very book that is the 2024 member resolutions. This is every direction that they have been given by the voting entities, which is co-ops across the entire nation. And it covers absolutely everything. What do we want for them to represent us on? We are in support of hydroelectricity. We are in support of nuclear. Those things. And it's all dictated here. So we help write the resolutions. They're voted on at the regional meetings. Then we rewrite the resolutions to make them the way that we believe they should be. They're approved by our committee, and then they go to be voted on at the annual meeting. So it is important. It's important that we read every one of those regulations. I had a, I'll call it a spirited debate with a gentleman who was in my subcommittee who felt like we should not worry about right-of-way access for wildfire mitigation. He's from the state of South Carolina. And there, when they chop up trees, what do they do with them? They line their right-of-ways with the wood chips. And he didn't want anybody to do anything that was going to mess up them putting wood in their right-of-ways. And he said, is wildfire even an issue?
Oh.
So we had a very good conversation while we were on our Zoom meeting. And then when we were in Florida, I said, so did you watch the news today? And he goes, I'm sure you're talking about the California fires. just checking to make sure that you're aware that, yes, wildfire is an issue. So those meetings were in conjunction with the NRECA CEO close-up. That was my first time ever attending that. I went to classes on political landscape, smart rate design, opportunity and risks of serving large data center loads, how AI will reshape the electric utility industry, communication strategies to keep your board informed, navigating safety challenges and successes, and the secrets to building a culture of excellence in today's world. The how AI will reshape the electric utility industry was incredibly interesting. We had one gentleman who raised his hand and said, I've never even used AI, where do I start? And the speaker said, when you get home, go find the youngest employee in your utility and have them come in and give you a lesson on ChatGPT. That's where you start. But as we learn all of the things that they're using AI for, one of the things that it's of course still in, it's in learning mode, but they take all of this historical data of weather and historical data of peaking. And they're, right now AI is just crunching millions and millions of lines of code trying to learn that. Then they take pieces out from weather and they take pieces out from peak and they want AI to fill that in. And then it's wrong. So then they recalculate until they can make it right. We still have a long way to go, but there will come a point where AI can say, this weather is coming, this is the peak load that needs to be served, what we anticipate, and it will just become more and more and more accurate. So it was very, very interesting. The other thing that was interesting is the amount of data centers that are required to continue with this growth of AI and the amount of energy that is going to be consumed by those data centers to do this. When asked about, well, isn't the technology going to become more efficient? And his answer was, the more efficient the technology comes, the more equipment they will stick into that building. It will never ramp back down. They'll just put more into the data center building. So that was interesting too. The last thing that I wanted to talk about was that President Trump on Monday did a declaration of national energy emergency and unleashing American energy executive orders. Now, among other things, the order set the stage to accelerate oil and gas drilling, expedite the approval of energy development projects, and remove red tape surrounding the federal permitting process. It's still incredibly early to tell how that's going to filter down and affect us. But one key thing that I wanted to make sure I reported to you guys was that a lot of the language that was used in both of those executive orders was shared by NRECA with President Trump's transition team, which really speaks to setting that good communication with his team already. And we'll, of course, follow that closely on the federal level, but then we will see how that's going to transition to our state level and how that will affect us in the coming years with our contracts. The last question that I have for you guys, I want to throw out there is, it is time for us to start planning our strategic planning session. NRU CSC has offered to facilitate that. They have availability in August on the 5th and 6th. That is a Tuesday and a Wednesday. That is the only dates they still have available in August. They also have the weeks of October 6th, 20th, and 27th. Now, I know that our strategy planning is very important, but I'm also keenly aware that October starts hunting season, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes. So I want to throw some dates out there and see what, get some feedback from you guys of what you're thinking. I've come up with a couple of ideas of places that I think would be very good for an off-site retreat, but I wanted to see if you guys are thinking later in the fall, if you'd like to push that out a little further, or if you'd like me to see if we can get on some kind of a list that if we could get in earlier, we would do that.
So the first option is August 5th and 6th?
Yes.
That looks good.
Yeah, that's something good. Get on that one if you can get it.
Okay.
Is Russell still employed by
No, he isn't. Do you remember Lindy?
That oh, yeah.
He is. He's in charge of that committee. That doesn't mean that he will be our facilitator, but he is in charge of that now. Okay, I will start doing some checking on August, and then we will report back and set some harder dates. If that doesn't work for anybody, please let me know, and we can, like I said, I'll see if there's anything available in September or if something happens to come sooner. Okay, that concludes my report.
Okay, thanks, Megan.
I have a question.
Sure.
Carol.
Yes.
She's gone. She will be. Yeah, who's going to take over Region 9?
I'll give you a report on that.
Oh, my goodness.
Good question.
Thank you. It's irony.
I wanted to start off just by saying that the transition process with Melissa and I is going very well. But I'm staying a lot busier than I planned. I haven't started going through my files or anything yet. I might have to pull some all-nighters before I go. So we'll see how that goes.
As long as it isn't overtime.
the first thing I wanted to update you on is the Moapa project. And it was late in December, just a couple of days before Christmas. Randall and Melissa and I went to a meeting in Las Vegas at the county building. There we met with the people from the Moapa project and every department from the county. So we're talking the school district, fire, police, roads, everybody, sewer district, discussing the Moapa project.
What is it?
It is the development of Moapa with commercial and residential growth.
It's a new community
similar to what we saw at Pulte, except with a lot bigger commercial footprint included. So we participated in that discussion. I was very happy that they invited us because they usually think of power as an afterthought. I don't know that it was super helpful other than we were there to represent and at least get them started about thinking about those things. In regard to that, I have been tasked by our interim general manager CEO to work on an application process and some modeling for those new large loads. And so I'm working on those things, including developing some better paperwork and applications that they can use. Every year, by December 31st, we're required to do a vulnerability assessment and relook at our emergency response plan. We did that. I made updates and corrections to those, the assessment and the response plan. I gave those to Aaron Walker, and he submitted those by December 31st, so we're in compliance with what the Nevada Division of Emergency Management and Homeland Security wanted from us. So that was taken care of. Also, early this month, I created an emergency action plan, and that covers emergencies basically that have to do within our buildings and warehouses. And we went through that with the employees at our safety meeting. I'm continuing to update and work on that. But there's a lot of good information that's going to be included in that, including how we evacuate the buildings and where we go to and how we keep everybody safe. So hopefully I will have that completed by our next board meeting. NREA Executive Director Search. So I was tasked with leading the recruitment and the application process. So the applications have been coming to me. We've received 10 really good applications. 10 applications. So I prepared a plan and a hiring process that I sent out to the NREA general managers and the executive team, which they've approved. It included some scoring and some analysis of the candidates. I've gone through and scored the different candidates at this point, and I feel really good about at least 5 of the candidates that we are going to start scheduling interviews next week. We will do a virtual meeting with those 5, and then based on the feelings of the executive committee, we'll narrow that down to 2 to 3 candidates. And then hopefully by the time you go to Public Power Day in Carson City, the full board will be able to meet while everybody's gathered in Carson City, and they will interview 2 to 3 candidates and make a decision together at that meeting. So that's moving along fairly well, and I'm excited about that. CRETA, we've been really busy working on hydropower issues. 2 of the main issues is I've told you before about the legislation that we've tried to push through, and in December I went through the different names of who has headed that up. That legislation has made progress, although it is now moved through a committee, but it's waiting for a hearing before the committee for that move forward, and we don't anticipate that is going to happen until everybody gets approved and in their new roles in the new administration. So we're kind of stalled out on that. We're already hearing talk of privatization of the PMAs. That's all the hydropower projects by the Trump administration. That is of great concern to us. We have used those projects. We've paid for those projects with interest. We're not in favor of those being sold to an entity that's going to run those at a profit and sell us the power at a profit. And so we're working against that. Melissa alluded to the fact that Jim Matheson had sent a lot of great information, just a wonderful about 3-page letter outlining NRECA's concerns to President Trump. President Trump has listened to most of those with the exception of the PMA issue. And we've already seen some encouraging changes to energy policy and the way that they're looking at some of those things. One of the big challenges here is during the Trump administration, they can drill for gas and make natural gas cheaper and more available. Part of the problem is the manufacturing in this country is so bogged down that we cannot get a generator, a natural gas generator, for 5 years. And so even if the gas becomes available, we're still facing other challenges in the industry to solve this problem. Nuclear is a great solution. I think the Trump administration is in favor of nuclear proliferation here in the country with that as a generation source. But again, that's a very lengthy process. It will not be finished by the time Trump's term ends. So we still have some challenges ahead as far as the generation side goes. And I guess I'll leave that for you guys to navigate. So that's my report. Let's have some questions for me. Okay, thank you.
Do you think we should visit generation in-house again? Well, I'm sure we should at some point. We looked at it pretty seriously 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When do you think we ought to look at that again?
Well, we're already having talks we've spoke to several entities about that. I won't go through the list. We can maybe talk about specifically who in our executive session, but we've talked to multiple agencies about partnering on generation, and there have been some people that are looking, for example, at the gas lines to see what kind of capacity's there, and the ability to step up the gas production. And so those wheels are in the works. It's moving slowly, but it's in the works.
If it takes 5 years to get a generator, though, that's a long-term project.
Yes, it is.
Longer for the transmission. So.
I guess the question then would be, if there's that kind of demand and that kind of weight, would it be beneficial to start the process knowing that we could fail, get out of line, probably even get our money back because they have such a demand? Or is that a potential waste?
That's a perfect topic for executive session.
Okay.
my takeaway before was that it wasn't economically, well, it was maybe feasible, but advantageous.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Our contract was too good. It was just going to cost a lot more for power. And I didn't really, feel like it was advantageous. It'll be interesting to see how things change
and gaskets. And there's a lot of moving parts here because, we have an existing contract. We have enough transmission lines to bring power here. We have potential growth that's going to happen. But that potential growth, even though it could be very large, is not going to develop overnight. And so the timing of when you do things and how you do things is going to be very important. And it's going to take some work with a crystal ball as you go forward to make the timing work right. So we need to continue to talk about that, but very carefully.
Good question. We did have a report on the progress of the solar in Mesquite. Are we still looking at them to be online?
They still, I'll let you tackle that because you've talked to them last. I've got the report from you.
They've assured me that June 30th. Their mechanical date is slated to be April of 2025 with a full in-service to serve us by June 30th.
Okay, so our next item is item J, review and approval to appoint voting delegates, alternate voting delegates, appointees. Possible action.
Becky, do you want to bring up the... I assume everybody got a chance to look at this, at who's serving where. And if you remember who those are, you know that you have to replace...
NRECA.
Yeah, Mike Young and Dell Rust are currently serving as the NRECA delegates, the voting delegate and the alternate. And then if we go to the next one, which is CFC, that is Mike Young and me, I believe. No, that was Mike and Judy. And then the next one is for Federated, which was Richard Jones and myself. And then with NREA, we have Jack Nelson and Del Rust. And then with Silver State Energy Association, Jack Nelson and Chad Levitt. And then Pioneer Utility Resources, Mike Young and Chad Levitt. So you can choose to keep those as the same, with the exception of replacing Judy and I, one at CFC and one at Federated, or you can just change the whole mix. It's up to you guys.
I'm serving on these committees and stuff. It really takes a long time to figure out what the heck is going on, like finding the restrooms. And so,
that's very good.
I thought it was a pretty good line.
It is a very good line.
I heard that song. Anyway, it seems to me that if we select new people, they really should be in the alternate to start with, because you learn what's going on, and generally speaking, the people who are doing it have a little insight and can explain everything to the newcomer. If you just walk in the door,
it's hard to tell what the heck's going on. It's just my suggestion.
I think that's great perspective.
Could we just be requesting to be off?
Other than the two.
Could we just plug Melissa in wherever you are?
You sure could.
For Federated.
Okay, I think we ought to do that. Yeah. Make a motion.
I move that we put Melissa in Federated as the...
The alternate.
That's alternate.
Yeah.
So who will be the alternate for CFC?
Randy.
The new guy will be with us.
All right. Perfect. Yeah. Randy. The new guy on the block, right?
Do we do Randy? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
I make a motion that we leave them how they are with the exception of putting Melissa in where Mendes was and Randy where Judy was.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got a motion.
I second it.
Second. Are you still with us, Dale?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm ready to go.
All right, here we go. Everybody in favor,
say aye.
Any, did I hear Dale?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Who seconded that? Sorry.
I did.
Chad.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's see.
Good job.
Are we on K, review and possible approval for possible board of trustees
administrative regulations.
Overton Power District number 5, administrative regulations for possible action.
Okay, so what I did is I took a look at the board policy for trustees. Yeah, I would like the red line up, please. Thank you. So I looked at that. I went through this. I made some just minor tweaks on a couple of things that I thought made sense. Yeah, let's make it a little bigger if you can, too.
That's not the red line.
Am I not the right one?
No, that's not. I believe it has red line in the title.
I think it's over...
Yeah. That looks like the one.
Yeah, it is. Same title. Oops. Yeah. Give me a minute. It's been a while since it's been.
Well, we'll give you a minute. So I went through and made some minor changes, but the big thing is. And I'm sure that you've talked to trustees about this at other utilities that they have an iPad or some type of notebook computer, a Chromebook, whatever flavor of device that you like to use. They can bring those to board meetings. You can download the documents so that if something's hard to see or if you want to be able to read something a little more in depth, that you have it in front of you. I also think that it's important for you guys to be able to review these things thoroughly at home. So I'm suggesting that a reimbursement be made available to the trustees for some technology improvements. And so I'm suggesting that, and again, I'm suggesting, so if you want to suggest something different than what I've put in there, it's up to you. So this is just the starting point as far as I see it. So what I've suggested here is that we make $50 a month available to you for a reimbursement to use either for internet service or to buy a notebook computer that you can use at home and bring to meetings and take to different meetings with you so that you have all your documents on your device and it's available to you. One of the things that I looked at is, and I read what some other companies do. Some companies started off with the idea of, well, we'll buy a device and we'll give it to the board members. and they discourage that because of the different devices that are out there. It's like with phones. Some people love their Apple phone. Some love their Android, whatever that other one is.
There's one in the room.
And it's the same with notebook computers. I don't want to buy a notebook computer and give that to you and it be something that you don't like to operate and won't operate. I would rather have you get what you like, run it, take it with you wherever, and have it ready to go and you know how to run it. And so I met with Stephen. We looked at notebook, different brands of notebook computers. The Google Chromebook, for example, you can get a good Google Chromebook for $500. You can get a keypad and a bag to go with that, $600, $50 a month for a year. You've been reimbursed for that. You're certainly welcome to get more expensive devices. For an example, an Apple iPad is about $1,100. We would ask you if you want to use something like that, that you pick up the extra cost. One of the challenges with the $50 per month is you can probably only get either the Chromebook or do internet service. There's probably not enough money there to do both. And so if you want to look at that $50 and adjust that, that might be something to think about. I also put in here just a time frame that you have to submit the receipts for your expenses 60 days in advance if you buy, for example, a notebook computer. And that is just so, I looked at putting it 30 days, but if you buy it in June and we have our meeting in August, we take a summer recess, you're going to miss that window. I just put it at 60 days. That's why the 60 days is there. And then the other thing that I put in there is this last paragraph. I threw it in there, but I mean, if you want to exit out, I'm certainly available to that. I don't know if we need that much hand-holding, but I put it in there anyway, just so you could think about that. If a trustee leaves office, either voluntarily or involuntarily, within 1 year of a computer hardware reimbursement, the computer or the money paid in reimbursement comes back to the company.
That's probably the only thing personally I would take out, just because I feel like if somebody leaves, they're probably leaving, they died, it's going to be a big deal. Most likely.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to ask them to pay that back.
So the only reason I put it in there is some company said, well, what happens if you want to get rid of a trustee or they're removed from office? That's the only reason I put it in. So, but again, I don't know that you want that level of hand holding. I just threw it in there.
Yeah. The other thing I would say against that particular one is that if you're getting paid $60 a month and it takes a year,
only 50. You're already fudging the numbers.
We have that on our cost. Yeah. But anyway, so if you leave within the year of getting the reimbursement, that means you have to wait another year, or we pay $50 a month back. I mean, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And how often does someone leave? Very rarely, and many times it's for sickness or something, and you know, bump them out. It seems to me that's not going to happen very much.
Well, I always try to put something in there that you can scratch out, that you can make this your own
choice.
The alternative would be, rather than having to pay it back, because you're obviously if it's your internet or that, it's you're putting use to it for that month, right? So it's worth the investment. Would be, let's say you bought a computer though, that at the month you retire or kicked out or whatever, that would be your last payment. You're not entitled to the remainder
of the payments
reimbursement
for the year.
It would only be through that time, and then you're done. You will.
Yeah.
Waive any further refund.
So you'd have to wait the whole year before you quit, huh?
If you had paid the whole $600.
You should have had the foresight to buy it sooner.
But Byron, we could just say you must be an active board member to receive reimbursement.
Yes, and if you're no longer a board member, you will no longer receive any reimbursement.
Okay. You got that, Becky?
Does anybody have any different numbers in mind, like higher or?
I looked up the Apple iPad just because that conversation came about, and it's you know, with the keyboard, the 11-inch, you're living about 950.
Yeah.
But I don't know what people like, so I think $600 is maybe just a hair low. I'd probably fit the middle there somewhere. But if you like Apple, you're easy with a keyboard, yeah. $900 to $1,000.
You bet.
I don't know who does Apple, who doesn't, but.
I was an Android guy, and then I got onto Apple. Now I don't want to change. Oh. I just don't like change.
Well, $50 sounds pretty, you know, reasonable as far as what you're getting. In Mesquite, it's $59 a month. I think I sent you something on that.
For the internet.
Yeah, it's $59 a month for internet service. Obviously, we use some of it ourselves, or some of us do. I don't know everybody, but so that. But you only get one or the other. So if you want to buy a computer, that's fine. If you want to just use an internet service, that's fine, and you pay for the computer yourself. Which I just bought a new laptop. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see before you pass this.
I want you to know that I put a little dig in here, and this wasn't directed to you guys, but I'm sure that you've seen this. And that is that a new notebook computer would be superior to some of the existing equipment that's used. Especially at NREA, if you sit in those meetings, there are people that are fuzzy, that are garbled, and it disrupts the whole meeting when people are like that. And that's not you guys, but we see it on a regular basis, and it's really annoying.
Well, if you have an Android, or not an Android, but a Windows machine, you got to have Windows 11 now. Yeah, I mean, they're going to finish next year. They're phasing out Windows 10 with support.
Thanks for putting this together.
Yeah. I personally opposed to it. We talked about this before. We just give a rate increase, and then we're giving ourselves more money. I just don't like the optics very much. And I think that we're not going to perform any better or worse when we do this. And so I think it's probably poor timing. Needed, it's just nice.
I like that it's not, you're not just giving it to us. If people want it, they can request it.
And if you feel right,
you know, if somebody can use it, then I think it's fine. But
yeah, well, it seems like it's not just use it towards internet for having sex. Yeah, you have to buy it.
I'm a little bit on the other side. I like, and I've talked about this a little bit, but like the presentations that we see today, I like to have those emailed. Just so I can go back and refer to them, whether it's the growth, whether it's the hacking, whatever the case may be. I'm kind of a slow learner, so I have to read it two or three times. Yeah. The other thing that I've noticed is with whether it's iPad or whatever the case may be, maybe I'm getting older because I can't see half that stuff. And so with that being right in front of you, at least you can blow it up, you can see it a little more visible. So when you know it, you know, when you get to talking, at least I can follow along. I try to do it on my phone, but obviously it's a little smaller. I'm not saying it's right, wrong, or different. It's just different how you handle things. If you go to trainings, you can pull things up quickly. If you documentation on whether your notes in executive session or board meeting, you can put that in your file. It's just a different way of doing business. That's all.
It's surprising when you go to other board meetings, though. Almost all of them are run on laptops. Every board member has a laptop, and they're looking at the presentation on the laptop.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think that... pretty darn common today.
Well, like Bob said, maybe not everybody wants one, but if you want one, maybe you fill out the form.
Yep.
Not that everybody has to have it.
I'll move that we approve the resolution for
at Overton.
At what? Are you going to say the mail?
Yeah, Overton Power District Number 5 Administrative Regulation at the rate of $50 per month, maximum of $600.
Do you want to change the verbiage on that piece?
I'll be glad to. Go ahead.
That Byron suggested that you have to be a current board member to receive reimbursement.
Yes, and with the amendment that we changed the wording to be, you have to be an active board member to receive any reimbursement. I noticed you...
Are you going to make us pay it back, though, if we die?
No, that's the piece we'll take off. We'll take it off, yeah.
Is this per year or total? He said per year.
$600 maximum per year, $50 per month.
Per year.
Yeah,
okay. Keeps your internet going, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
Let's see, was there any more discussion on amounts, or are we all good? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
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 Call for the opposing.
Call for opposed.
Anybody opposed?
Any?
Opposed.
Opposed, yeah.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Okay, we're on to item L, review and possible approval, temporary employment policy, possible action.
So a few years ago, we put this temporary worker policy into effect, and what we say in the policy that every year we will come to the board and ask for a specified number of summer interns and, or not summer interns, interns and summer workers that are part-time workers. We've also set an amount based on changes in the Nevada minimum wage. This past year, the minimum wage changed in July. And in the past years, it's changed every July, but that law expired, and so there's no anticipated changes to the policy because the financial amount is the same. But we're going to come back to you and again ask to have the same number of interns and the same number of workers or combination thereof, depending on how we can fill those roles. That was programmed into the budget. So if you approve that, there's no change to the budget. If you deny it, then that money will just stay in the budget and be available for something else. But we're asking for four summer workers and four interns again this year, just as we've done the past several years.
Were we able to fill the positions last year?
This is your last time
that
you get to say how worthy it is. This is the last thing. Don't let it go.
I'm not going to do it. I take too much hassle over that.
I'll say it for him. This is Menace's last time that he gets to say how valuable the temporary policy is, because we currently have our general manager that was a temp for Overton Power. So,
well, see, that was a win because I got you to say it.
Every year for the last decade, we've heard that it's his last time and he misses the opportunity. I'm not going to let it go.
So have you had a hard time hiring some part-time?
Sometimes we've had a little bit of problem hiring summer workers, because some of the people, you know, at the fast food restaurants have been at $16-$18.
Well, see, this is my point. I know over in Mesquite, Pan and Garden, or whatever they call it, it's $18 an hour. Casablanca, $15-$16 an hour. And so my question is $14 a bit low? I mean, if you're going to want these kids, I'm assuming kids, to work in the heat of the summer, XYZ, what is it, $14?
We do give them far more hours than they get from those fast food restaurants, and it looks far better on their resume.
I agree.
And this year, Randall can answer far better, but we were turning kids away in both valleys.
Yeah, we had a good turnout this year and the year before, didn't we?
For summer help, we had we didn't fill one intern position.
The interns is a little bit different, but
so
the summer
four
help
in each valley, is that what you're saying?
No, four, two in each valley. Well, actually, summer helpers, we do two in each valley for the summer. And interns, we usually hire one or two a quarter, and they work in both places.
But you haven't had the opportunity to hire anybody for that?
Yeah, we did.
Recently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's just sometimes where we have, for example, two interns in one quarter, and then the next quarter we don't have anybody.
Sure, sure.
So the interns is a little bit more in flux, but summer workers has been going.
And we have schooling required for interns, too.
Right,
they've had to
be enrolled in some type of college or some sort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the temp
help. I don't know that the $14, I don't know that you necessarily need to raise it, but I think it's around the corner. Because kids are a little bit different these days, and you know, $14, it's hard to get them out the door sometimes.
I think it's a little low.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard work in the summer, for which you do some for the most part.
Yeah,
I think it's low. In California, they're paying fast food workers $20
minimum. Was that last year?
Minimum.
Kelly, that
ridiculous.
We raised it last year?
But
What was it last year?
Never had a complaint about the wage either. Okay. And they're happy to come to work at a weekend.
And not everyone's working outside. A lot of them helping with the office staff.
He's still rotating through the different departments.
The interns rotate through the different departments. The summer workers, we just move them through different things as needed. But what we've had is we've sent them out to work, for example, on right away in the morning and the afternoon. We've had painting projects or cleaning projects that they've been able to do inside. So that's got them out of the summer heat because kids aren't we're used to working outside, kind of like when we were youngsters.
Do you pay them the same?
Yes. No, the interns make more. They make 16. The summer workers get 14, the temporaries.
So if you're raising one, you probably should raise the other.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They're part of the problem.
Well, the problem is we have starting wages for some of our full-time employees, and we don't want to bump up too close to what a full-time employee makes, or
sounds
then
like
we have to adjust those.
Any further discussion on the amount?
I think it needs to go up. But I'm okay with it for now.
I think
as long as you have it.
We budgeted for this year. That's something we can review for next year, but we already budgeted.
And I also think that if, as we get closer to the summer, if I come back and report to you that we're having a hard time hiring, then we can address it at that time.
Not enough applications.
Yeah.
That's good.
I move that we approve the hiring of 4 interns and 4 temporary workers in 2025.
Second.
I'll second that.
Double second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any?
Aye.
I jump every time. Like, geez Louise, how do I not know
Jack,
that's coming?
So we're down to M, public comments.
I don't think there's anyone on the other side.
The seat left.
That was a glimpse into an eternity there, wasn't it?
No public comment.
No pub. Okay. Any trustee comments?
Only thing I would ask is potential, whatever the possibility is, to get those reports emailed out, whether it's a Google file that all of us get tap into just to reference.
Okay. We have that on our staff meeting agenda to discuss, so, yes.
Oh, I was going to put the squeeze on Scott. He does it at the last minute. What about that?
It would probably be after the fact.
That's fine.
Just so you can reference that.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Item O, approval next board meeting Wednesday, 19th of February in the Mesquite Boardroom.
I move that.
Okay, it's been moved. The location will be in Mesquite on the 19th.
Got a second from Bob?
Got a second from Bob, thank you. Everyone in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, executive session.
Executive session, yes, sir.
Okay, let's take a 5-minute break here.
If I could get the chair, the vice chair, and the secretary treasurer for a picture before you take the break.